from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning in what is being called a victory for teacher unions, the California Supreme Court voted 4-3 yesterday not to take up the long-running Vergara case, which was at the center of the debate over job protections for teachers in the state's public schools. The state's high court decided not to review a lower court ruling upholding tenure and other job protections for teachers. We'll look at the decision and what it means for California and the nation. Then at 9:30, on Sunday, a federal court in Texas blocked an Obama administration policy directing that transgender students at public schools be allowed to use the bathroom consistent with their gender identity. We'll talk about that. Join us for Forum. It's up ahead after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In a victory for teacher unions, the California Supreme Court on Monday denied review of Vergara versus California, keeping in place a ruling that nullified a 2014 decision that California's teachers' protection laws were unconstitutional. The plaintiffs in the lawsuit claimed that the education code made incompetent teachers too hard to fire and that, in effect, minority and poor students were disproportionately taught by ineffective teachers. Monday's ruling stated that administrators, not the statutes, ultimately determine where teachers within a district are assigned to teach. We want to discuss in this opening segment of Forum the court's decision and possible next steps for groups challenging current teacher protection laws. And we go first to the state capitol and welcome Anna Tentakulis, who is education reporter for KQED News. Anna, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's begin by just establishing the fact that this ruling pretty much allows the status quo to go on as before. In other words, tenure rights after 2 years, seniority with layoffs, and a long process in order to hire. Fire. Yeah. So everything stays the same.
That's right. The big headline here is that teacher job protections will remain intact. So this is a big victory for the state's teachers unions. And as you mentioned, in refusing to hear Vergara, the state's high court not only sided with the unions, but also the state of California, who say these job protections are really both reasonable and constitutional.
Let me take you back, though, and take our listeners back to 2014 when a Los Angeles Superior Court actually ordered job protection struck down and did so because it was unfit, it felt, for low-income and minority students for the most part.
Right. So the group that filed the suit is called Students Matter, and they're based in Silicon Valley, funded by a very wealthy man by the name of David Welch. And the group itself is supported by philanthropists who really have battled unions on a number of fronts. So in 2012, they filed this lawsuit, and they challenged essentially five statutes that grant protections of tenure to teachers after 2 years on the job. And when it came to layoffs, that when they happen, that they must be based primarily on seniority. And with when it came to the dismissal process, that it would be more lengthy and difficult for many other state employees. And so they challenged these statutes, saying that they essentially deny students the right to a quality education because they make it very difficult for districts to fire bad teachers. Now, the teachers unions obviously were fighting back, saying that these protections are needed to protect teachers from unfair labor practices. It also helps to recruit quality teachers. And so the LA Superior Court judge who heard the matter, his name was Judge Rolf Troy. He struck down all these statutes, which was huge. It was a landmark ruling that sent ripple effects throughout the country and actually spawned similar cases in New York and Minnesota. But that was really short-lived because the unions, the teacher unions, filed an appeal along with the state of California and the State Department of Education. And in April, an appellate court decided to reverse that ruling.
There was a reversal in April of the ruling. And as you said, this has become a national test case for teachers' unions protecting teacher job protection laws, as you said, in New York and Minnesota. A lot of people hear the name Vergara. They don't know who Vergara is. Can you explain that?
Yeah, actually, this lawsuit was filed on behalf of 9 public school students and one of those students, last name Vergara. And, you know, they mostly went to school at school in places in Southern California. But there were also students in Northern California, specifically in Oakland. And so while, you know, the teachers union will say this was just funded by philanthropists who really want to, you know, bash the unions. But at the heart of it, there were these great pieces of testimony of these kids, mainly from, you know, in at schools serving low-income minority students, who had these great testimonies of feeling like they were essentially not getting the education that they deserve.
This will go where now? To the legislature? I mean, in terms of the advocacy from Silicon Valley or wherever it is throughout the state?
Yeah, I mean, where it goes next is a little unclear. I mean, this is essentially the end of the road for this Vergara case. They can't take this up to the U.S. Supreme Court because the suit wasn't challenging federal laws. So, you know, in terms of the group Students Matter, they are planning to push for legislative change in Sacramento, which hasn't been very successful in the past. But they feel that this is a real launching pad, that, you know, change can happen now if they get more legislators to look at some of the dissenting opinions, because the California Supreme Court wasn't unanimous in letting this ruling stand. There was 3 judges that felt that the case should be heard. So they're hoping to take that momentum forward. They also will challenge this in other similar legal cases. They believe that they can take this again to the state court setting, the federal court setting, in different ways.
There are still big questions, and certainly determining good teachers from bad teachers, or what to do about incompetent teachers who have tenure. In fact, there was a Teach Plus survey of over 500 California teachers, and 69% said they were concerned about protecting colleagues they felt should be indeed fired. So let's bring Michael Rubin into this. But before we do, I want to bring you, our listeners, into essentially weigh in. In fact, let me give you our toll-free number. Whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, you can join this segment and do so by calling us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. We invite your calls. Again, the toll-free number. If you'd like to have a say on the California Supreme Court upholding the decision that teacher tenure laws can remain, we welcome your calls at 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum. I want to go to Michael Rubin, who's an attorney representing the state's 2 largest teachers unions, and I know this is a major victory, Michael Rubin, for the unions. What do you say, though, to, you know, the people who will argue that essentially these tenure laws are shielding incompetent teachers, and they're maybe even harming minority students by having teachers who have seniority who are incompetent thrown into areas where perhaps the underprivileged are not being served?
The facts show otherwise. The courts, the Court of Appeal made clear that the statutes weren't the cause of the problems. Even the dissenting justices in yesterday's Supreme Court order recognized that the statutes weren't the cause. The problem here, and we recognize that there are problems, but the problem is partly a function of government funding and how the funds are allocated. And it's largely a problem, as the trial testimony demonstrated, of how the statutes are implemented by individual school districts, principals, administrators in those school districts where you have more thoughtful, more effective administration. The problems identified by the plaintiffs in the Vergara case simply don't exist. When LA changed its system of providing tenure from an automatic, essentially passive system to an active system, the grant of tenure went down 50%. Several administrators in school districts, large and small, minority and majority throughout the state, said they can make the decisions within 2 years. If you extend the tenure period longer than 2 years, you're going to keep some underperforming teachers on longer than they should be kept because the decisions are delayed. And there was, as often happens at trial, testimony on both sides, but the courts of appeal, the 3 justices unanimously concluded that the statutes weren't the cause of the problem. So the way to deal with this is for the legislature to keep looking at the issues as it does year after year, and for parents and students to get more involved at the local school level and put pressure on their own school districts and administrators to implement the statutory framework in a way that supports student education.
There is a great deal of concern, though, about 2 years being too short, which I'm sure you're well aware of in terms of deciding on tenure. In fact, most teachers felt, according to some of the canvassing that was done, it should be 3 to 5 years. But I want to get your sense, as the attorney here, of how this moved forward. It moved forward to a great degree under equal protection. That is, it went forward from the lower court because of equal protection, right?
That's right. And the equal protection theory that plaintiffs pursued was novel. And is dead. There's no question after the Court of Appeal opinion, which is now the law of the land, and the decision by the 4 Supreme Court justices not to take the case, that this new way to twist equal protection law to allow any individual student who's unhappy about his or her classroom experience to seek to invalidate the entire statutory framework for teacher hiring, retention, and dismissal makes no sense. For equal protection, you have to have two distinct identifiable groups, and there has to be a statutory scheme or government action that treats similarly situated people differently. Here, there's no way to determine in advance who may be adversely affected. It's not an equal protection case. And even the justices who dissented from the denial of review recognized that at most this is a fundamental rights case, which has to be treated very differently, and the evidence just didn't support it because these statutes aren't the cause of any violation. If plaintiffs were right in this case, there is absolutely no statutory scheme that could survive review, and any time any student or parent was unhappy about a classroom experience, they could sue to strike down, using the sledgehammer of constitutional litigation, any practice, policy, rule, or statute that had any impact, direct or indirect, on that experience. Curriculum decisions, availability of textbooks, who the other students are in class with you, class size, and so on and so on. That's not the role of the courts. Those decisions should be made at the school district level, and the overall structure should be set by the legislature as it is.
Well, Governor Brown actually went on record here saying that student plaintiffs failed to show that California hiring and firing rules are unconstitutional. Michael Rubin, appreciate your joining us. Thank you. Michael Rubin, again,
pleasure.
Is attorney for representing the state's two largest teachers unions. Let's find out what some of you, our listeners, have to say, and then I want to hear from Anna Tentakulis about what those in dissent on this ruling had to say. But here's someone who is in dissent, and that's Jack. Jack, you're on.
Yes. Very disappointed in this ruling. In no other industry that I'm aware of can you just skate on by with incompetence and stay employed and get a pension. I am a taxpayer. I have a child who is going to be entering the California school system. When I was at a California State College, there was a professor who was known for giving easy A's, and you know, everyone got an A and you didn't have to do anything. I've got a friend who's a teacher who kind of jokes about it. You just kind of got to show up because they need bodies to fill these classes. It is unbelievable that this is still going on in today's economy.
Well, Jack, I'm glad you ventilated your feelings. I thank you for that call. And I want to hear from another caller from New Jersey. That's Carl. Carl, you're on.
I think you're...
Carrie, I'm sorry.
Me, Carrie?
Carrie, I'm sorry. I thought your I was an L. Go ahead.
It's okay. Don't worry about it. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah,
this
sure.
is the show all the time. I live in New Jersey, and I have my niece who's staying with me right now who lives in Newark, California. She has a very disabled mother who had a terrible, terrible stroke in her 40s. The school system is completely aware that they have a parent who cannot always actively be there and advocating, but she does her best, as do my in-laws, you know, her grandparents. They call the schools, they call the guidance counselors. Nobody's returning their calls, you know, and so they're trying to take care of their children / grandchildren, and the teachers and the guidance counselors are unresponsive. And here we have a family that is in need of a little bit extra help and a little bit more support because they have a very disabled mother at home and a father who works full time. And the school system has no resources, or the teachers themselves, she says, don't care.
Well, there should be just basic civility in terms of returning those phone calls. And I'm sorry that that's been the experience that you've had. And I appreciate your letting us know about it. And thank you for the call. I'm going to go to more calls here in a moment, time permitting. But I want to go back to Anna Tentakulis. Anna, can you talk about the dissenting justices and what they had to say in this?
Right. The high court, the state's high court, has seven justices. Three justices offered dissenting opinions, and that was Goodwin Liu, Mariano Florentino Cuellar, and Ming Chin. Now, two of those justices have been fierce supporters of the rights of minority children as law professors. And so, and I'm reading here, Justice Cuellar said, difficult as it is to embrace the logic of the appellate court on this issue, it is even more difficult to allow that court's decisions to stay on the books without review in a case of enormous statewide importance. And so essentially they said, this is such a huge issue, we need to weigh in on it, was essentially the common dissent, in that it, you know, was consequential to the future of California. But again, those three justices, their thoughts didn't prevail.
Let me bring Marcellus McRae into this conversation. He was co-counsel for the plaintiff in the Regar case, and good to have you with us, Marcellus McRae. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
I guess let's begin by just talking about the notion of tenure in 2 years. The main argument that one hears from the unions, and this was obviously a major victory for the teacher unions, is it protects from arbitrary dismissal. It essentially protects academic freedom as well, but also that it attracts quality candidates for essentially low-pay, high-stress work.
Yeah, that was the argument that was advanced. But if you actually look at the evidence at the trial court, what you saw is that when you take this whole system, which is the tenure provision, which is the so-called two-year to tenure rule, the dismissal statutes, as well as the LIFO statute, essentially, which is the last in, first out statute for layoffs, what you see from the testimony, including of teachers themselves, is that these laws actually create disincentives with respect to attracting quality teachers for a number of reasons, not the least of which is even the experts that were offered at trial by the state and by the unions conceded that the probationary period should be longer, should be 3 to 5 years. And when you look at the dismissal statutes, it makes it illusory that there actually can be a dismissal of ineffective teachers for performance reasons, given the extreme cost and the amount of time in order to effectuate a dismissal. And finally, with respect to the last in, first out statute, where a layoff can only occur on the basis of seniority, imagine what that says to a young teacher, a teacher who has, let's say, less tenure than another teacher, but who gets stellar reviews, only to find out that at the end of that year, where they've gotten accolades and done a great job, that they're going to be laid off, not because of their performance, but strictly because of the incredibly arbitrary, non-correlative idea that they don't have seniority. And we actually had teachers come into the courtroom and testify that in the same year that they got Teacher of the Year, they got a pink slip that they were going to be laid off for no other reason other than seniority. So, in fact, it's actually the opposite. These laws, and this is why you have a trial, where as opposed to having stump speeches, you have to adduce evidence and prove your case. The trial court that sat, that observed this trial for 8 weeks, that had all the evidence, that was able to synthesize all of this, saw firsthand that these laws would fail both a strict scrutiny and a rational basis analysis, because there is not a compelling interest to have these laws, and it certainly isn't narrowly tailored to the interest that they purportedly serve.
Well, you've lost in this decision, and as I said, this has been a major victory for the teacher union. So what are the next steps for Vergara here?
Well, I think that what we have to look at, and you had some reference to this in the prior person that was speaking there, is number one, obviously, to examine all options and to continue the fight to challenge these laws, which affirmatively harm the educational interest of all school children in California and that deny them equal educational opportunity. You have to look at the fact that the two written dissents here are extraordinary. As far as we're aware, there hasn't been another case in at least the last 50 years in which two or more justices have written dissents from the denial of a petition for review. Even more encouraging is, as you look at Justice Liu and Cuellar, as they make clear, they not only would have granted review in the case, but they would have reversed the Court of Appeal. And the Court of Appeal, as you read what was written in these dissents, and I would encourage people to do that, very eloquent, very comprehensively done, point out that there were likely errors made by the Court of Appeal, as well as tension with existing California precedent that have no basis in California law and that significantly weaken constitutional protections for California citizens. So when you talk about the next steps, as far as we see it, the words of Justices Liu and Cuellar will resonate throughout California and the nation, as we've seen, for many years. And what has often happened in our jurisprudence is that dissents eventually become vindicated and become the law. Just like the dissent in Plessy v. Ferguson eventually became Brown v. Board of Education, we believe and will continue to fight for our education system to be fixed.
Marcellus McCray, again, is co-counsel for the plaintiff, Vergara. And thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate
you
being with us. I wanted to get another caller on here while we have a little bit of time. Let's get Paul on. Paul, welcome.
Sure. Thank you. I taught for 40 years in San Francisco School District, and my father began teaching in San Francisco in the 30s when there was no tenure. And many stories that he told and shared about teachers who were seen in private life doing something that a citizen didn't like, and they were reported to a school district and let go. So I understand that there's two things, to be, you know, there's two points of view on this. However, maybe instead of just throwing everything out, we could find some kind of a middle ground that provided for review. I've had to document teachers who were incompetent, and it was very tedious and very difficult to bring to fruition. However, it can be done. And it will be done when an administrator finds that somebody is not doing their job.
Paul, I'm glad you brought up administrators here because I want to read a comment that a listener writes on our website. Marjorie writes, seems ridiculously disingenuous for wealthy Silicon Valley philanthropists to cloak anti-due process actions in terms of seeking education for low-income students. As a former public school parent, I appreciate teacher due process rules as a check on arbitrary actions by administrators. There were a couple of times I came across teachers who I felt should be removed from the classroom, but in each of those times there were administrative failures, i.e. administrators not doing their jobs and evaluating teachers properly. In one case, a teacher who had probably been on the job 10 years too long was removed within a year after a new administrator came on. The quality of administrators should be the focus of citizens seeking to improve education for all. And how much have administrators been part of this whole discourse, Anna Tentakulis?
Yeah, I mean, they're often not included, and I think they should be. I think, you know, even the teachers' union, as you heard earlier, they admit that the whole issue of hiring and firing, there needs to be reforms. But does that mean we should strike down these employment statutes? You know, that's up for debate. I think, you know, what you heard from the other side here is that they want to really win this battle with public opinion. And so there was even talk that maybe we should bring this issue to the voters and see what they have to say. I mean, you do hear strong opinions on both sides. And so this issue will not go away.
Well, we're going to another issue which has strong opinions on both sides. Thank you, Anna Tentakulis. Good to have you with us. Education reporter for KQED News. And thanks to Michael Rubin, who represents the largest teachers' unions, and Marcellus McCray, who was representing the plaintiff, Vergara. We, when we return, are going to talk about a judge blocking the Obama administration policy that allows students to choose the bathroom based on gender identity. Stay tuned for that. It's up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.